of the Living Geek.
Welcome, everyone, to Podcastica, a Doctor Who podcast here on the Night of the Living Geeks Network. My name is John, and joining me this week, as always, is my good friend Taylor. Taylor, how are you?
Man, I'm well. We've gone, we've broken through the diamond wall that is Thanksgiving, and now the Christmas tree is up, and the Christmas lights are up on the house. So,
excellent. That's good.
Yeah.
That's what happens when the clock strikes midnight on Thanksgiving. It becomes Christmas time.
Just about.
For most of us. Or if you're the stations on DirecTV that play music, as soon as it becomes Thanksgiving, they start playing Christmas music on the holiday station.
I believe it.
Mainly because I don't think there really is any Thanksgiving music.
You know, I don't think there really is.
And you know what? Right now, that is not important. We have a doozy this week. But before we get into the doozy that was Heaven Sent, we have some Who news.
A little bit, yeah. First off, the Christmas special, which still doesn't have a title, it's reported will be more of a lighthearted romp, and I figure that's probably a pretty good thing given how this season has been.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree. This season has been heavy, heavy, heavy.
Yeah, and what an awesome season it's been.
Yes, indeed. We actually should also mention, I believe it's Paul Verhoeven.
Director, but not actually the director, Paul Verhoeven.
No. This is a different man who is fantastic, and you guys should go watch his videos. He makes some great observations and also says that this is one of the best seasons of Doctor Who he has seen in quite some time.
And I am totally inclined to agree with that.
Yes, I am. I have some friends that have stopped watching the show, not because of Peter Capaldi, but because of Stephen Moffat. And I'm going to try and rope them back in somehow. I don't know how, but I'm going to do it.
Start by not telling them that Moffat wrote this, and when they see this episode and they absolutely lose their minds, be like, hey, did you happen to know that Moffat wrote this?
Oh, boy. You had some observations from previous episodes.
Yeah, actually, it's I give Amber and Kobe lots of credit. They really worked hard this week to catch up on episodes. Because they knew the finale was upon us. And so last night we sat down and watched Face the Raven as it led into Heaven Sent. And so I got to watch it without trying to take notes at all, which I sometimes like better because I can just absorb some more stuff.
Right.
And in the episode when Ashilda goes to remove Rigsy's chronolock, she then proceeds to describe, because she's very matter of fact. She's like, okay, come here, Rigsy. Let's get rid of your chronolock. You know, the doctor's got his teleport band on. We know what's coming. So let's do this.
Right.
She goes on to describe how she had made a special deal with the Quantum Shade, basically to set up the doctor into this whole situation. And, but still had promised it a soul. So she was taking the chronolock, being explicitly stated, I wholeheartedly believe that having been alive for as long as she has been, she was going to offer herself and effectively commit suicide.
Huh. That's very interesting.
It just was one of those things that when I heard that line delivered, what other soul did she have to offer up? You know, it's like, oh, you were on your way out.
Huh.
And now that's been thwarted, too.
She's been thwarted at every pass, basically.
Yeah, and again, easily duped, apparently.
Yeah.
The other neat thing, it was something I meant to mention on the podcast last week, because I'd read a couple of articles about it, but totally forgot to until after the fact, so I'm going to mention it now. If you go back and watch the episode, I believe it's at the scene where Clara convinces Rigsy to transfer the Chronolock onto her. There are some posters in the background, and there's one that some very sharp-eyed viewer went, wait a second, that's a language from Star Wars.
Yeah.
That alone I'm impressed by, but then proceeds to sit down and translate it.
Yes.
And it translates to DeLorean. And if you actually look again at the poster, the picture, which is just a very simple line drawing, it's basically, you know, three circles in a Y shines much. So again, when I saw that last night, I was like, oh yeah, look at that. It totally makes sense. You could have told me it was Klingon, and I believe you.
Yeah, right.
But that was just one of those neat little Easter eggs kind of dropped in there. Very, very astutely done. But just, you know, one of those fun things to show off to friends at parties, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That was a thing just for us, for the people not in this universe, or in that universe. That was just
exactly.
A fun little thing for us. So, Heaven Sent.
Oh, boy.
Written by Stephen Moffat and directed by Rachel Talele. And Taylor, you have a synopsis for us.
I do, and I thought long and hard on the synopsis. I'm like, how do I encapsulate just this insane episode? I promise I will do my best this week to try and not have to exercise the explicit tag, but I can't make any promises. The synopsis, however, here we go. The Doctor spends 2 billion years taking the long way home and manages to only age maybe a couple of process.
Yes, just a couple of days in 2 billion years.
Because I never actually figured out exactly how much time transpires from the time that he kind of comes out of the teleport system there to when he returns to it, let's say.
Oh, when he breaks free, basically?
No. Just for one cycle.
Oh, okay. Oh, how much time passes between... Okay, I got you, yes.
Yeah, between the time he comes out, goes through everything he goes through, and then winds up crawling back to it. Just thinking about just that whole... Yeah, anyway.
This is one of the heaviest episodes, I must say.
It's just thinking back to it now and wanting to just figure stuff out. I'm feeling that sense of excitement, and there's not a ton of Doctor Who episodes that I feel that way about.
This was, and we've said it before, but I think more so than ever, this is Peter Capaldi at his finest in this role.
Good Lord, yeah.
He is just magnificent in this episode. I love the open. I guess let's start at the beginning, as my theater teacher used to say.
Can I jump in just real quick, just before we hit the open? I kind of feel like at least I needed to kind of put some context to this, because maybe we should hit this toward the end, because then obviously we're gonna talk about certain aspects. But I'm sorry, go ahead, John. Oh. Never mind me.
Okay. I just loved how it was shot. I loved the empty hallways with the camera kind of tilting a little bit, just to give you that little dizzy effect, like it was a long kind of windy hallway. And then, I mean, of course, yeah, we find out that this entire castle can shift and move, so it kind of gives you a little bit of that effect. And, I mean, we open with the Doctor being... Well, we open with a hallway full of blood.
Yeah.
And then we see a hand pull a lever and then turn to dust. And then the Doctor appears.
Uh-huh.
Which maybe should have been our first clue.
You know, it totally should have.
I kind of was like, that's weird, like, that this person would turn to dust, but the last thing they would do is teleport the Doctor somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So...
And we find out pretty quickly that he's already been doing this for 7,000 years.
Yes. Yeah, we find out very, very quickly that this has been a long time. Well, we also find out when he looks up at the stars and he says, I haven't time traveled, yes, but it seems like it's been 7,000 years, which was just very weird.
Yeah, just insane that he could actually look up, which, I mean, I guess once we finally you know, get to kind of taken up a level or taken out a step. Oh yeah, I guess he suppose he could look up and see the stars, but with the teleporting in, I'm kind of impressed that he's reusing the pattern buffer in the transporter. And don't tell me that Star Trek hasn't taught me anything.
The doctor says that he doesn't always listen, which was a reference to Clara not getting, he will do what he pleases and what he feels is right.
Yeah. This is very much the doctor off the rails, like literally where we're going. We don't need rails.
Yes, very much so. The veil, just extremely creepy. Probably one of the most fear-like Time Lord.
Only in the sense that it actually comes from basically a nightmare that the doctor has had, or maybe just had, when he was a child, because there was some old lady who in, I don't know if it was his village or his neighborhood, I don't know how Gallifreyan cities really are laid out. his province, maybe it's like Canada, I don't know. But there was somebody in his vicinity when he was a very young boy who died, and I don't remember if they just didn't discover her for a long time or what, or it kind of like took on this urban legend aspect, but you know, she's just kind of like followed by flies and stuff, which kind of interesting that Gallifrey has flies and so does Earth, but whatever.
Oh, yeah.
It's basically this manifestation of, you know, a nightmare that, or a fear that he has had since he was a young boy. And we all know that those are kind of some of our more deep seated fears.
Yes.
As people.
And yeah, the flies, it brings bugs around with it when it is near. That is just even more frightening, just an overall frightening villain or creature, if you will.
Yeah, completely.
And the first thing that the doctor says when he first sees the veil and he's kind of getting backed into a corner by it because he tries to open a door and the door opens to a wall.
I love it. And he's sweet talking the doors to open. He's just, oh, yes. please open.
That was great. I really liked that. And the door is open and there's a wall and he turns around and he goes, I think I'm scared. I think I'm scared of dying. And the veil stops, just yes. Completely stops. And I'm at this point, I'm just completely confused. And then the castle starts rotating and I went, oh, this is awesome.
Well, and I think one of the things that he says like immediately as he turns around, which is a complete Classic Who reference, because if you ask somebody who grew up on Classic Who, one of the most often seen features is corridors. People are always running down corridors.
Yes.
You know, we're in the TARDIS and there's corridors, and he turns around and he's like, and I've run out of corridors. He's run into a wall. He's run down corridor. He's got nothing else to run down. And here's this little Classic Who drop there that I just totally went bonkers for.
That's great. I didn't even think about that. Which episode had all the corridors? I feel like it was a regeneration episode.
Oh my gosh.
That we watched.
Peter Davison's, yes. Castrovalva.
Yes. That one had a lot of corridors. So.
It totally did.
So the castle rotates, and at this point I have a note that this soundtrack that they you know used to score this episode was just amazing. And there was either when he first enters this new room after the castle rotates, where it almost sounded like some of the aspects they were using were kind of like backmasking.
Explain to people who are maybe not as audiophilic, maybe he's not into audio as much as maybe you might be, what backmasking is.
Backmasking is, I guess the best way to describe it is it's almost like you put a message in a song basically in a song, and you play it backwards or you record it forward, but you flip the audio backwards and put it into your song. So it's like a little hidden message almost. And it sounds very weird. Just think of playing a song backwards.
Right. Okay. That makes total sense. Like the whole Paul is dead thing going yes. back to the whole At the Road.
Yes.
And hello, Barefoot. Yes, Clara died. We proved that.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Mark that on the board for us. I actually, right about the same point, noticed the music as well, because for a show that at this point in history now really kind of leans toward the orchestral.
Yeah.
There were some very just really strong, like 80s Peter Davison through Sylvester McCoy era just synth.
Oh yeah, definitely. It was synthy.
It stood out so strongly.
Yes, and the backmasking almost terrifies me, because there was a time when I would, you know, listen to stuff that was backmasked a lot, and if you haven't heard Revolution Number 9 backwards, I would do it in the light of day, because it is indeed frightening.
Oh, like watching Ghost Adventures when you're already a little too spooked from something during the night.
Yeah, basically. It's very frightening, and it's also just very interesting. It's just a very interesting tool they used in scoring the soundtrack.
Absolutely.
And in this room that the doctor has just entered, he sees there's a picture of Clara on the wall, and it is very, very old, apparently.
Not the last we see of Clara, basically.
Yes, which we will
get to.
Yeah, we will get to that. And I won't say what I actually wrote down, because apparently when I watched this, I was not in my complete right mind, which is funny, because I tried to watch my swearing in the notes, but not here. I said, "Oh shoot, he jumped out the window."
Uh-huh.
And he basically is backed into a corner, and he says, "Well, I bet you didn't see this coming," and he breaks the window with like a footstool and jumps out the window.
Yeah, he's very I don't know if I want to call him cocksure at this point, but he definitely has this kind of, you know, wild edge, where it's not just like, I'm going to do this and not say anything and dive out the window, but it's like, I'm going to like talk you through, you know, what I'm doing, boom, chucking this out, and I'm diving out the window.
Oh, yes, yes. It was his banter towards the veil is great throughout this entire episode. And
which I guess it comes down to a lot of talking to yourself.
Oh yes. Because this is basically a 53-minute monologue, except for maybe one scene.
Yeah, pretty much.
And when he confused for about a minute.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how you felt about that.
I, you know what, this whole, now remember, I tend to read a couple of synopses or a couple of recaps before I wind up seeing the episode. I can't break, but I'm sorry. I really should. So I kind of had an understanding of what this was, but the actual watching of it, the actual seeing of like, okay, remember in the beginning of the season when Missy describes how like the doctor runs through like a bajillion calculations in a minute to find like the way out of an impossible situation? Now we get to see it.
Yes.
That is freaking awesome.
It's amazing.
Oh, it's brilliant. It is so well done, and I am just sitting there just wrapped with attention.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it had my attention the entire episode, but as soon as you find out that this basically, when he needs to go figure something out, he goes to his quote unquote happy place, which is basically the TARDIS.
Yep.
And I feel
rule one of dying, don't.
Yes, rule one of dying, don't, which the doctor is usually pretty good at. And I believe this is when we get the chalkboard.
Yes, and we see just the back of Clara.
Which was very unnerving. I did not like that.
It was. It totally was. I'm like, look, we just lost her.
Yeah.
Do we have to kind of see her again?
Yeah. Yes. And I love that... he broke the fourth wall. It was very brief, but
so quick. I barely remember it.
He said, I'm nothing without an audience. And then after he said audience, looked directly at the camera.
Nice.
I was like, yes, excellent. Love it.
I love it. And then he dives into these calculations, and I'm just like, my note literally is, whoa, the calculations.
Yes. There were so many calculations.
Oh, and my God.
I feel like this part of the monologue, which I believe is he's still in the TARDIS, is it's very Tenet slash Smith like. He's talking very quickly and giving off so much information and being snarky at the same time.
Yeah, he definitely is, and I definitely I think that is a very, very fair comparison. Like this is a very timey-wimey episode, but in completely new ways.
Yes. Now my next couple of notes
are probably a lot like that.
They are stream of conscious as I was watching the episode live. The first one is, oh, that's a whole lot of skulls.
And mine is, whoa, skulls. I was channeling Keanu Reeves last night or something.
Whoa. So I'll just skip ahead to one of my skull notes. And I noticed that when we get to it a little later, that two skulls fall into the river or the ocean or whatever it is. And I feel like maybe when truths are told here, the skulls pile up, because he told two truths very closely in a row, and then two skulls fell into the ocean.
Huh. Okay.
Which, when we get further into the episode, would make sense, because if we're over 2 billion years into this, the skulls would pile up after a while in truth form.
Yes, I'm with you there. I just don't understand why.
Yeah, I don't either. It's just a weird theory that I had. Okay, so doubling on back, the doctor swims out of the ocean, and he finds another room, and he had and set up is
already,
yes, is a bunch of his clothes, like the clothes he is currently wearing. And that
bare outfit.
That is the moment when I saw the clothes set up and I saw the button. I said, that was the moment that I figured something was very, very wrong. And I put that this is very Groundhog's Day-ish.
Yeah, absolutely. This is seeing those clothes set up, and the fact that he changes into them and then proceeds to lay them out almost precisely the way that the last outfit was set up. Literally all three of us in the room went, oh, he set this up for himself. I just kind of had this acceptance of like, okay, he's going in circles here.
And I'm not sure what made me write this note down, but I think as soon as he saw the stars, oh, I know what it was. He goes into this room where he's kind of like outside, and there's a grave in the middle.
Oh, yes. Okay, yes. You're right. Right. I remember what you're talking about.
And he looks up at the sky and says, no, that's not possible. And I said, he's on Gallifrey already, isn't he? Which is a note I have written down. And all throughout this, one thing I don't know if we actually had mentioned about the veil is the video screens, the nice flat screens that are all around.
Yeah, somebody must have gotten a killer deal on them.
They must have, because there's a flat screen in every room.
Absolutely. Man, this is a nice hotel.
Yeah, it's but it's... You can see first-person view of the veil and how slowly it moves, and it's just very creepy. So that's when the doctor, that's how he knows where the veil is at all times. Mm-hmm. So he,
and I think he also, doesn't at one point he work out that if he like lures the veil to like one side of this castle and then runs runs to the other side. He's got a certain amount of time.
88 minutes, I think it was.
Yeah, like he worked 88. Nah.
It was something like that. It was something like
that. Yeah, yeah. But he works out basically how much time he's got to do these other things in his, basically his Groundhog Day.
Yeah. And then when he's digging this grave, we get an I am in 12, which he uncovers at the bottom, which I was like, what is happening? I don't understand. And then when the veil comes through the side of the grave, I was like, oh, jump scare. It got me. It got me really good.
Totally.
And he kind of figures out, because I feel like at this point he says something, he says another thing of truth. Oh, I didn't leave Gallifrey because I was
bored.
I left because I was scared. So he tells two truths there, and he the veil once again stops.
Mm-hmm.
And he, I think at this point he leaves that room. Oh, no. He doesn't leave that room. That's when we get another in the TARDIS scene.
Yeah, and in fact, this is about the point where I go, huh, confessions, because I find it funny that you call them truths, confessions make the creature stop. And I start going, oh, wait, is the veil the confession dial?
And you turn out to be correct.
Not entirely.
Well, not entirely.
The veil itself isn't, but I later come to the realization, even though I had hints of things rotating, and even in the cold open, some of the colors used in the lighting and stuff were complete clues as to where he actually was.
Yeah.
But you're right. He jumps back into the TARDIS.
Yeah, he jumps back into the TARDIS. And is this when we see Clara, or is it later? I feel like it's a little later.
I think it is a little bit later, but I think this is where we get him describing that hell's just heaven for bad people.
Yes, yes.
Or maybe he's sitting down at a table having a meal.
I think that might have been after this. Like he's sitting down and he's having like soup or something. And then he kind of realizes what is 12. And then he kind of realizes it's a room that he has to find. I can't remember how many minutes it is.
Let's call it 88. And if it's, you know, 80 something, I'm sure Twitter will tell us.
They will tell us. Yes, for sure. And we find out that it's a room number. He's looking for the room all over the place. And I feel like it turns out that it's back where he started, right?
Almost. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, it sometimes with the rotation of the castle, it kind of changes.
Yes.
Whereas.
And that's when we see the writing that says bird.
Well, yes.
And he's like, bird? And then it kind of rotates and opens. And jeez,
apparently bird is the word.
Bird is apparently the word. And that's when he goes up and he thinks he sees the TARDIS. Like he goes up and there's this like giant, I can't remember. He says it's like 100 or 200 times harder than diamond or something like that.
Yeah, because if you look right at when he walks in and sees this, we'll call this diamond wall. Up at the top is inscribed home.
Yes.
And he goes, what, the TARDIS?
Yes.
And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
I know what you're thinking, Doctor, but no, that is home, yes, but that's not home.
It's not home. It's not original
this
home.
Yeah, right. It's yeah. And this is kind of the point where I kind of start losing my mind, because you can see stuff kind of falling into place, and then we get Doctor Who's punch out.
Yes, but before he starts punching, because he realizes that the last thing that the veil wants is the secret of the hybrid.
Oh, right, yes.
And he kind of goes back into his happy place, or where he, you know, figures stuff out in a quick manner. And this is kind of where we get his breakdown of how he basically misses Clara, and he kind of, I mean, he breaks down basically. And then as he breaks down and he's sitting there alone in the TARDIS, you hear Clara's voice and she tells him to get up, and she's there. Look, we get a little Jenna Coleman cameo in this episode, and she tells him he needs to get up, and she motivates him to get up, and he decides that he's not going to give up the secret, that he's going to just fight his way through this wall. And the doctor,
God,
he just full on just punches this wall, and he starts reciting, I can't remember the name of the, was it a poem?
You know, I honestly, I don't recall.
It was a poem, and it was about the bird. Okay. It was about a bird and how the bird, I think over, well, first of all, the doctor gets maybe, I want to say, two lines into this poem as he's punching this wall before the veil grabs a hold of him and severely injures him.
Yeah.
Basically to the point of death, and I guess not regenerating.
Yeah, and oh, God, the feels as he's crawling.
Yeah.
Oh, back to the transporter room. Oh, God, it's killing me.
And he kind of, it's half and half between the TARDIS and real time. And he figures out that he needs to hook himself up to this transporter, and it will, I guess, it'll transfer his, it was wibbly wobbly.
But it basically duplicates him.
Yeah, it duplicates his image and everything. But he has to basically, it needs an electric spark, so he hooks himself up to it. It turns out that he's the one that pulls the lever from the beginning of the episode. He's the one that turns to dust. He's the one that wrote bird in, and it's just a almost never ending cycle. And I would like to point out for fans of DC Comics, this is kind of almost how the villain Doomsday was created.
Oh, really?
In a fact that an evil Kryptonian scientist took a baby and would just murder it, but he would clone the baby every time. He would use some weird way, so then the baby became like a perfect, indestructible warrior.
Wow.
And hated Superman and then killed Superman. But I digress.
Speaking of swearing in notes, this is the point where I go, oh, Sheezy, the skulls are him.
Yes, which would also make sense, which is also a good theory and probably exactly true. But I just wonder how they got in there, because I don't recall him throwing skulls into the...
I don't know either, but that moment where he kind of splashes down and the camera pulls back and there's him, and there is just as far as you can see,
yeah,
just an uncountable number of skulls, and it hits you just how long he's been doing this and how determined he is. And I literally lost mind, but transpose those four letters with four other letters,
yes,
and you will have what I actually lost.
I loved that we got the basically, it's been 7,000, it's been 12,000, it's been 600,000, it's been 1,200,000, it's been 2 million, 20 million, 52 million, a billion, over a billion, and it was just like, at one point, I was just like, just please let him punch through this wall already.
Completely. And that whole, I mean, we're basically in the last like 10, maybe 13 minutes of the episode. And just the way that it is edited and the way that it is all just, it almost feels like everything is just accelerating. It's just like boom, 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 boom. And it just knocked my socks off. Like, yeah. I've never seen something done just that intensely.
Oh yes, just the fact that he's basically punching a, I want to say a 20-foot thick brick wall, basically.
Yeah.
To get to the other side, and he's just dying. Who knows how? I mean, if you divide, I don't even know how you would do it. If you divided,
that's what I wanted to figure out. I totally wanted to figure the math out.
I think if we went by the time he gets killed the first time, like as soon as he like pulls the switch and comes out mm-hmm. again from the beginning mm-hmm. of the episode, and then figured it out that way, and somehow by the 7,000 times or 7,000 years, we could figure it out. But it was a metric F-ton, if you will, of times.
Yes.
And yeah, wow. Just,
yeah.
Just, he, hell of a bird, and he finally breaks through.
Oh my God. This, yeah.
That, just those were some, I don't know how long the scene is where we find out, you know, when he's numbering off the years, but it felt like it went on for 15 minutes. And I know it didn't.
Totally.
It's just, you can tell he's just determined not to give the secret up. And he finally gets through, and the veil is destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And he walks through the other side, and immediately I knew he was on Gallifrey, because where else would he be? And then as soon as the weird wall behind him kind of folds in on itself, and I went, oh my God, he was in the confession dial.
Yes.
Oh,
how
man.
Effing crazy is that?
It's great.
I mean, it. Yes, last will and testament. His willpower, for sure, and it's a testament to him, but it's not. It doesn't hold a pre-recorded confession.
No, that's the, yeah, that's insane.
The whole bloody season. You get stuck in it, and you are forced to confess.
Yes. It's,
oh my God.
And he did confess a lot, but not the one thing that they wanted to know.
Exactly.
Which is,
and so here he is, the hybrid thing. I mean, but here he is on Gallifrey. He turns to a kid who just you there.
Well, hey, I almost wonder if I almost wonder if that child was there and they said, as soon as it closes up on itself, bring it back to us.
I don't know, because it doesn't look like a part of Gallifrey where, you know, people just happen to stroll through on their way to the shops or, you know, down Starbucks or something.
Yeah, definitely.
But all three of us, the doctor rattles off, you know, basically, you know, a large paragraph of information to this kid. And the first thing, I kind of like look over at Amber and Kobe goes, that's a lot of information to give to a kid. I'm like, yeah, that kind of is.
Yeah, it was.
I want him to relay all of that accurately.
That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then we find out that the hybrid is indeed the doctor, or we think it is.
Right, because I have some questions about that spurred on by stuff that I have read, because he literally says the hybrid is me.
Yes.
Which can, at this point in this season, could mean one of two things.
Yes. It could mean him as the doctor, or Ashilda, who refers to herself as me.
Or as I like to call her, Mayor McMe.
Mayor McMe, which...
I don't get tired of that.
I don't either. I do not. So that's the big reveal, is that the doctor has all along known who the hybrid is. And it's either he is actually the hybrid, or it is Ashilda. I don't know how he would be the hybrid, though. Now, he could be the hybrid from, if we take, and we reviewed the this, TV. If you want to go back, yes.
Oh, you were going there. Okay.
If you could want to go back to the TV movie, that is actually a thing that we find out that he's half human on his mother's side, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Which, okay. I don't know why they would go ahead and bring that in. Or maybe I don't even know. I don't know. Could he be a hybrid of himself as in he just died like a countless number of times, but was recopied in the image of himself. I have no idea. I don't know.
I think there are straws on the table, and I see you reaching for them.
Yes.
But, I don't know. I'm willing to entertain quite a bit of speculation on that because we've got, you know, 6 days until we find out.
Yeah.
But I do love the very last thing in the episode is he grabs his sunglasses, he puts them on, and I was waiting just for that, like that David Caruso moment from CSI. I was waiting for, yeah!
Oh, man.
Which I'm really hoping that somebody will actually take the video from that and edit in the sound effect of the music and just do like the Doctor Who CSI opening sequence.
That would be funny.
Please do that.
Someone with the skills and the know-how, please. We would appreciate that.
Yep.
So there you have it. Just a brilliant episode. Just all around. Peter Capaldi, as we said, just completely shines in this episode. Great all around. That's really all I can say.
Yep. Now, I will say, however, and I was texting you about this earlier today, but after having watched Face the Raven and Heaven Sent last night, and I will admit, Face the Raven totally made my wife cry. She very much kind of is the embodiment of fandom. Sometimes, like when we watched Lost back in the day, she'd get attached to a character, that character would die, and she'd be like, I hate this show. The show is terrible. I'm never watching again. And next week we would sit down together. So last night and this morning, I kid you not, she was like, I hate this show. This is killing me. I'm never watching it again. You know, then of course reasserting that she's angry at the people who make the show, not me. I wasn't worried about that. Countless times it is like, I'm never watching this again. She said that when Matt Smith left.
Oh man.
I'm watching this again. Yes, I know, sweetheart. You'll be watching. It's you will watch next weekend.
Oh man.
Not going anywhere.
How will you not watch next week?
See?
How?
I know I will very much be watching next week.
Now, I think one thing I would actually like to know is when we, at the beginning of this episode, as we established, he's already been in the confession dial for quite a while doing this. I kind of almost would have liked to see from the beginning, like when he first gets there, because I feel like that experience is a lot different than when we jump in.
I agree.
Because it's like, how did he figure out all this stuff?
Well, it took about 7,000 years.
Yes, apparently so.
Now, because I've got a couple questions with that, too. Is that a subjective 7,000 years? Like, is time compressed in the confession dial? Or did 7,000 years pass in the entirety of the universe? Did 2 billion years pass in the entirety of the universe?
No, I don't think so. I think it was just in the dial itself. It was compressed time.
That's kind of what I figure. And really, this goes back to what I wanted to figure out at the very beginning of you and I sitting down to talk about this is I feel like I need to kind of lay out the context of events going back to the end of Face the Raven. So the Doctor hands Ashilda the confession dial, right? So she's holding it. She's got it in her pocket or something, right? And then he gets teleported at the end of that episode to the confession dial that Ashilda's got in her pocket or whatever.
Yes.
And then presumably, now I'm doing this while I'm looking at your next week notes, which I will let you dive into, but so either she hands it off to somebody and the confession dial while the Doctor is in there going through all this is transported to Gallifrey to be laid out in some random spot on the desert for God only knows what reason.
Right.
Or she travels there with it.
I'm going to assume that's what happens.
Well, judging by your next week notes, yes, I'm assuming that as well. So either the confession dial or Ashilda, or Ashilda and the confession dial are transported to Gallifrey, where it's just placed out there in the desert for 2 billion years. Or were those used subjective inside? Yeah, okay, we already discussed that part. Sorry, yeah. I'm reading my note here.
I'm sure all of this and more will be answered next week, where we will watch Hellbent, which is written by Stephen Moffat and directed by Rachel Talalay once again for this week and last week.
Last year's season finale, too.
That is correct. This episode will be the last episode that features Jenna Coleman as Clara Oswald, which means when the Doctor regenerates, he will become Jenna Coleman. No.
Why did I pick this face?
We can dream, people. We can dream. It also sees the return of Maisie Williams as Ashilda / Mayor McMee.
John, I'm going to ask you to quote your sources at this point, because this is absolutely the first I'm hearing about this. I only understood that she was on board for 3 episodes, and we have had those 3 episodes now.
Yeah, my source is she's shown in the next week.
Okay, fine. I'll give you that.
But
I didn't know if you had read an article somewhere or what, but...
No, everything in this next week I have quoted from is from Wikipedia, and Wikipedia did not steer us wrong when they said that we would see Cybermen in Face the Raven.
Okay.
So actually every villain or monster they said we'd see, we saw. So all hail Wiki. The Daleks, the Weeping Angels, and the Cybermen are all appearing as well. So this should be a fun romp through Gallifrey. I wonder, and you know, just because we love theories, I wonder if you remember in Tenet's last episode when Rassilon came down and he had those two women by his side that were covering their faces?
Yes.
Can we please get the connection that Weeping Angels are actually Time Lords that were exiled and cursed? Can we get that, please? Can that happen?
I seem to remember either reading or hearing that they were, and maybe all I was hearing at that point was just a theory.
I think it's still a theory. I don't think it's actually been proven to be an actual thing.
Gosh, I hope so, because that really, seeing the powers that the Weeping Angels have, it makes sense.
Oh, it makes total sense.
That it would be a result of something Time Lordy.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. So, I mean, only time will tell. And we have about 6 days left, and I'm very excited.
I can't believe that we are already coming up on the season finale.
Yeah, the Christmas episode.
This season has just sped past.
It really has. It's gone by really, really quickly. And before you know it, the Christmas episode will be here, and then we will... be without who for a little while.
Yeah, you know, John, I'd like to propose something. I think maybe we can do it once the Christmas special is passed as well, but and maybe just after the new year. But I think, kind of previewing the season, I think we should have an episode looking back at the season, and maybe looking at how we did with our guesses and our predictions, and just kind of recapping and looking back at the giant arc.
Yes,
I think we should do that.
I 100% agree. We should indeed do that. And then we have to prepare for the off season, where we will, if you have suggestions for us that you would like us to watch some classic episodes or maybe some not so classic episodes, just hit us up on our Facebook, and
God forbid you could torture us and be like, I think you should review this incredibly crappy episode from, you know, the late 70s or the 80s or whatever. Oh, and it's like, okay, fine, we'll do that.
I think you should watch the TV. I do not know. Somebody would, though.
Great.
Yeah, they would. Somebody would. It's just how it goes. I think that's it for us this weekend. Or weekend. Oh, boy. Folks.
That's okay. It's a Sunday.
It's been a long weekend. Literally. Because we had the days off.
I'm doped up on turkey.
Yep. Oh, boy. So, you can like us on Facebook. Just search for Podcastica. Look for some Gallifreyan writing. You can follow us on Twitter, at ThePodcastica. You can follow me on Twitter, at Sir Pingle. And you can follow Taylor on Twitter,
at Bus Buddha.
Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud, and rate and review us as well. Huge shout-out to the Y-Axes. You can find them on Twitter, at the Y-Axes. And you can like them on Facebook, facebook.com/theYaxes. And make sure you head on over to notlg.spreadshirt.com and buy one of our podcast shirts. We would appreciate that very much. And that's about it for us this week. Join us next week when we go to hell or we go to Gallifrey, whichever. We're going to talk about Hellbent is what I meant to say. So
yeah.
We will talk to you guys then. Bye.
See ya.